Darren, I did it for your own good. I couldn't let you meet a conservative client dressed like a...
Go ahead, say it. Like an attractive, desirable youth.
That's hardly what I was going to say.
Hello and welcome to the Halloween episode of Gayest Episode Ever, the podcast where we talk about the LGBT-focused episodes of classic sitcoms, which is to say the very special episodes that also happen to be very queer episodes. I'm Drew Mackey.
I'm Glenn Lakin.
And today we have a special guest, Chase McCown.
Hello, everybody.
Chase, you are actor.
Yes.
Improviser.
Guilty as charged.
Comedy person.
Correct.
Writer.
Yes.
Movie poster model.
Once. Yes.
Only takes one time.
Care Bears 2, The Next Generation.
The Human Centipede, the very first. I am the screaming person at the helm of that poster.
Did you actually have to scream, or did you just like mime the screaming?
I mimed screaming.
Okay, that's
good. It was a quiet set.
How long was that photo shoot?
Truly an hour.
Lasts forever.
Yeah.
So when you hear the name Chase McCown, think Human Centipede.
Please.
But also Bewitched. We brought you in because you are somewhat of a Bewitched superfan. Is that accurate?
Yes. Thanks to TBS back in the day, 3:05. They were always like 5 minutes after the hour and a half hour.
Why?
I don't remember. I remember the Brady Bunch was on at 3:35 p.m. vividly.
Yeah.
Because I would set my VCR for both of them.
I thought that was weird too, but I guess it made sure that you could finish one thing and then go to TBS and you wouldn't miss any bit of that Brady Bunch episode, which you probably had seen before. TBS back in the day, reruns was the first time you saw Bewitched.
It was.
What about it made you latch onto it?
There was a lot. I mean, I think first and foremost for many fans, it's just the concept of magic. And, you know, as an adult, yes, you can see the wires and see the edits, but I think on a superficial level, it's the magic. And then kind of like with the Brady Bunch, you also see that there's this underlying message of acceptance. So when you're a young gay kid, even though you're not fully aware that that's why you're drawn to it, that was prevalent throughout the series. It's like, hey, if you're different, you belong in this universe. And then gay or not, I've always thought Elizabeth Montgomery was quite beautiful and fun actress, great actress.
As I've mentioned on this show before, I think, I dreamed about her the night before she died.
Whoa, in 1995?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's probably your fault, you think?
Oh, definitely. She was wearing all black in the dream.
Oh, that is crazy.
Mm-hmm. I'm magical.
Thinking about like the show as being an accepting place, we're going to talk about all the gay stuff, but I just realized now that, yeah, everyone who visits that household is a broken weirdo and they all have a lot of things wrong with them.
It's like your house.
Yeah. Glenn.
Uh-huh.
When did you first encounter Bewitched?
Not until I was like adultish, maybe teenager. I was a I Dream of Jeannie kid growing up, which is, you know, just like Bewitched, but like instead of a strong, powerful woman, it's like, what if we made her subservient?
She does have a better bedroom set.
Yeah. I mean, that show's all sorts of problematic, but I still loved it. But I did enjoy Bewitched as a teenager. Obviously, Paul Lynde, which we'll probably talk about.
I don't see why we'd bring him on. That's weird.
But I'm definitely not a super fan.
It was on briefly in syndication when I was a little kid, and I liked what I saw, but I was very surprised to encounter it later and find out it was for adults. I thought it was a children's show because it's like really fun for kids to watch, and there just wasn't really anything. I guess there was like Small Wonder, but there wasn't that much like that on normal TV in the 80s.
Mm-mm. Were you jealous of Tabitha?
Yes. She had powers too.
Yeah.
I suspected that she was cuter than me too. And I was right. I was a very cute little kid.
That's subjective.
I've seen like maybe a third of the episodes of this show. I looked at the list. There's 254 episodes over 8 seasons, which means that they did not give those people a break back in the day.
No.
Mm-mm.
But I was also very surprised to find out how gay it was. And I think the thing that tipped me off was there's actually a joke about it on The Critic.
This commercial appeals to gay Generation Xers.
Okay, who was cuter, Uncle Jed or Jethro?
Jethro was a bimbo.
Uncle Jed.
Okay, on Bewitched, Darren number one or Darren number two?
I liked Uncle Arthur.
It is two gay guys playing pool and talking about which Darren was cuter, and
neither.
Thank you, you beat me to it.
Well, you can argue with the writers of the credit because that was the joke. And that was the first clue. I was like, oh, there's like a gay aspect to the show. And then as I keep learning more about it, I'm like, oh, this is a really fucking gay show. Like, it is very much so in the DNA, even if they never did an explicitly gay episode. And this one's not quite there, but it's still pretty fucking gay.
It's close.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say 86%.
86% gay?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Bewitched, if you don't know, ran for 8 seasons on ABC, September 17th, 1964 to March 25th, 1972, starred Elizabeth Montgomery as Samantha Stevens, beautiful newlywed married to Darren, who's played by Dick York in the episode we are watching, but would shortly after be replaced by Dick Sargent. I don't know. It's one of those things. I always think that I Dream of Jeannie actually came first. Totally didn't.
Nope.
It was a year after. It was completely derivative of this one. And this is probably the most successful of like this era of like magic sitcoms
mm-hmm.
compared to like Mr. Ed.
My Favorite Martian. You had, I think Bewitched set the standard for those. It set the standard, but yeah, started the trend for sure.
But I don't think anything that came after it ever topped it. Like, I guess,
no.
Would the Munsters be considered?
That magic? Was only two seasons.
Was it really?
Yep. That and the Addams Family both were two seasons and then done.
That's what about weird. Out of This World?
That's the 80s, so it's different. We did. Oh, yeah, I guess that's another magic sitcom that they had in the 80s. So I guess, and like Harry and the Hendersons. Weird. They did come back in the 80s.
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay. Well, I think my favorite is My Mother, the Car.
Oh, boy.
I cannot believe was an actual TV show mm-hmm. and was. It literally about a mom reincarnated as a car.
Yes, her soul's a very catchy theme song, too.
Everybody knows in a second life we all come back sooner or later. As anything from a pussycat to a man-eating alligator. Well, you all may think my story is more fiction than it's fact. But believe it or not, my mother dear decided she'd come back as a car. She's my very own guiding star. A 1928 Porter, that's my mother dear. She helps me through everything I do, and I'm so glad she's here. My mother car.
This show, this good one's created by Sol Sachs, who was apparently inspired by both Bell Book and Candle, mm-hmm. where Jimmy Stewart romances Kim Novak, who is a witch, and a movie called I Married a Witch, where Frederick March plays a man who romances Veronica Lake, a witch. He wrote the first episode and then kind of was out of it. So he got all the royalties of the show that's still in syndication now. He got for writing one episode.
Wow. Yeah. Isn't it great?
It was the number two most watched show the first season it was on, second only to Bonanza. And it was on for 8 seasons, but like through the 5th season, it was like number 11. So it held on pretty long.
There's a Japanese show called I Married a Witch that I thought was an adaptation of Bewitched.
Is it not?
Well, didn't you just say, talk about a show that's called I Married a Witch? Are you talking about the Japanese one?
So the movie is it's an old movie with Veronica Lake called I Married a Witch, but there is a Japanese show called that. And according to what I read, it is a remake of Bewitched.
Mm-hmm. I've seen episodes of it. It is wild. Like they fight Satan sort of powerful demon force.
Aren't we all on a daily basis?
I would watch that show. Also be down for a reboot of Bewitched where Darren and Samantha fight Satan. No, I guess that's The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. Never mind, they're already doing
that. How do you feel about the movie Bewitched?
I mean, does anyone have anything positive to say about the movie adaptation?
Nope.
It's over.
Yeah.
The theater was air conditioned.
Yeah. That was really disappointing. Not even knowing the source material that well when I saw it in the theater. That was just a travesty.
For lucky listeners who didn't see it, it is about a TV producer played by Will Ferrell who wants to reboot Bewitched and does so by accidentally casting an actual witch in the role.
Nicole Kidman.
See, the premise is actually not terrible.
I disagree. The premise is extremely terrible.
I actually think in a different dimension, this movie could have been good, but literally every other decision they made about this was not good, except for casting Kristen Chenoweth. I think this is the first thing I ever saw Kristen Chenoweth in. She plays the neighbor. They have a Gladys character, and then they have another actual Gladys played by Amy Sedaris.
I have not seen it since it came out.
I mean, don't.
Nor I do not intend to.
Also, they have Kristen Chenoweth and Amy Sedaris in the same movie and don't give them any scenes together, which is a terrible idea. Anyway, The Good Bewitched. I have a big section called Why Is It Gay? But first, when did you guys like realize it was a gay show, basically?
Today.
Thank you, Glenn.
I think there are a lot of different endpoints to calling it a gay show. One of them being its own campy aesthetic, part of it just being kind of some of the people who were on it, like Paul Lynde, Dick Sargent. So I think that for me, when Robert Reed died in the early 90s, and kind of opened up this discussion in the pre-internet days about like other well-known gay actors who had to hide it. And that might have been around the time that I really discovered Bewitched to begin with. And so I think that when I started to watch it, granted in the Midwest and granted very much in the closet as a teenager, I think it always struck me as kind of a gay show for several reasons.
Like appealing strong female lead.
Yeah, strong female lead. Everyone is welcome here. The weirdos are the heroes. Mm-hmm. Don't let traditional mortal society tell you who you can be and how you have to act.
Conservatism as the villain.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Especially in this episode.
It is the villain, but it's also to a certain degree something Samantha's buying into because she, like, Endora's super liberal and she's taking more of a step towards the center. But we we're supposed to encourage her for doing this. We're not supposed to side with Endora, I guess, right?
I don't know. I always, and I think that's an unintentionally interesting takeaway from Bewitched, is you can side with whomever you want. I, of course, out of the gate was like magic, magic, magic.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people at the time in the country were still pretty conservative. And so to them, it probably did say, look what happens if we allow this liberal mindset into our country. Witches and warlocks will wreak havoc with their spells.
I think probably like from the get-go and the conceptually they were high-fiving each other when it was like, what if the mother-in-law was actually a witch? It's like, oh my God, that's great.
Right.
And so they probably wanted Endora as the villain, not really realizing that she was fun.
I mean, I guess it never really occurred to me until now that people wouldn't have liked Endora, but I guess like a lot of people watching it when it was first on had been like, oh, she's gaudy makeup and she's like overdone and overbearing. Like we don't like her.
And oftentimes, just as magic at the beginning of the episode would set in motion the conflict that drove it, many times magic, without Darren knowing usually, it was also what fixed the problem at the end of the episode. So it was a narrative that they kind of showed both sides of.
Oh, that's good. I like that. All right, so I'm going to go through now and my big list of gay. First of all, Elizabeth Montgomery, huge advocate for gay rights and also HIV awareness. Straight herself, but she co-grand marshaled the LA Gay Pride Parade in 1992 with Dick Sargent. Darren number two, who had come out in 1991, just a year previous, shortly after they both died, which is very, very sad.
Mm-hmm. Again, not my fault.
You can't blame me for Dick Sargent either. Fine. Then Agnes Moorehead. I always thought Agnes Moorehead was openly lesbian. Apparently, that is not exactly true. She probably was a lesbian. I don't think she ever said anything on the record about it, but there is a quote from Paul Lynde saying, well, the whole world knew Agnes was a lesbian. I mean, classy as hell, but one of the all-time Hollywood tykes.
Yeah.
Class act, that Paul Lynde.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because she was a film star before anything else. She was in Citizen Kane.
Which is weird, so weird to think about, but also explains like she's so good. Even like that dialogue would wither and die coming from a lesser actress. She does a really good job with it.
And, you know, she was in the ranks with like Tallulah Bankhead and a lot of other Marlene Dietrich, other known lesbians back in her film career portion.
My film education is slipping from my mind as I age. But I feel like there was a Hitchcock movie that was written for her to star in, but the studio gave pushback and it was eventually went to a man.
Anyway. Oh, I thought, and I can't remember it as well off the top of my head, but I thought Agnes Moorehead was in a Hitchcock movie, at least one.
She was, and I can't remember.
But maybe not the one.
True Computer.
Maybe she didn't get the part.
I turned my Wi-Fi off because it's making that weird noise again. Okay, so it is interesting that Endora deeply resents Samantha's decision to marry a mortal and abandon all that makes a witch's life special in favor of something that's conventional and suburban. She is gay culture. In fact, there is a meme. That's a meme I saw on Tumblr, and it's weird to cite a meme exactly, but that's what I'm doing right now, where it is like a screen cap conversation between Endora and Samantha. Maybe you'll know what episode this is because I'd like to actually cut it in. Samantha's defending her decision to live the life she's living, and she delivers this monologue basically that's actually quite beautifully written. And if I gave it to you out of context, you'd be like, oh, this is like fantastic writing. I don't think people would suspect that it was actually from Bewitched.
Well, I think we're very lucky. All young married people dream of owning their own home. Well, it's fine for them, Samantha, but not for us. We're quicksilver, a fleeting shadow, a distant sound. Our home has no boundaries beyond which we cannot pass. We live in music,
in a flash of color. We live on the wind and the sparkle of a star. And you want to trade it all for a quarter of an acre of crabgrass.
That's really good.
Yeah, that is like second or third episode.
Okay.
It's when they're buying their house, like right after they're married. So that's early on in the series.
That writing's really fucking good.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine hearing that speech and not being like, well, she's right. Like Samantha's really giving up a lot, but I guess Samantha also really loves, what's his face?
Darren.
Durwood.
Also, I found a book called Uninvited, Classical Hollywood Cinema and Lesbian Representability by Patricia White, where she actually points out that in the opening credits, you see the cartoon Samantha and Darren. She is a cat. Then she turns into Samantha and he's like holding her in her arms. And then there's a giant cloud of black smoke that literally overshadows this scene of like conventional heterosexual love. And then the text that reads is, and Agnes Moorehead as Endora.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very interesting. Never thought about that. Also, her default costume is purple and green.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason in comic books, that is code for villain. And Joker, Lex Luthor, the Riddler, Green Goblin, original costume Catwoman, Mysterio, Brainiac, the Lizard, Mesmero, Circe, and Morgana Le Fay are all people who have purple and green for their default colors. So I guess, I don't know if that's something people were ever conscious of being a thing, but I guess they're trying to suggest villain. I can't imagine why that's just, she has that one costume that shows up again and again.
From what I gather, because it was on a network, granted that was the only option at the time, and beginning at the very early part of the mid-60s, I think that what they represented was sometimes to placate a more traditional audience, even though what they were showing and telling more subtly was a more open-minded, progressive narrative. So if they costumed Endora that way, you know, having recently rewatched a handful of episodes, there's never like a narrative stance, like take Darren's side, take Endora's side. So I think that some of that was left either just to the functioning of a situation comedy where you've got to have an antagonist and conflict, but I think part of that was also left to the audience to make their own decisions about who's bad, who's good, who's right, who's wrong.
I feel like that is the writers giving more credit to the audience than I think the audience is usually capable of getting.
Sure.
But nice that they did that at least.
And what's interesting is that I think time, more than anything, has established Endora as a non-villain. If anything, especially now in the 2019 era where you don't tell a woman like what she can or can't do, especially if you're a man, I think that Darren has kind of become an unintentional, not a villain, but far more of a foil now than Endora would be considered if that show were to be presented and pitched and served as a pilot in 2019.
Right. He's holding her back.
Yeah.
From doing cool, literally preventing her from casting magic.
From being who she is, fundamentally.
Fuck men.
Fuck Darren, both of them.
Does that include Paul Lind?
Someone should.
No. Paul Lind, to me, is the gayest part of the show. And what's interesting is out of 254 episodes, he's in about 10.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. I had no idea he was such a... I thought he was a much bigger part of the show.
That's what's interesting. And even Endora herself is in a third of the entire episodes of the show.
Huh. Well, I guess they stick out.
They do. Mm. And, you know, Elizabeth Montgomery knew in real life that both Paul Lind and Dick Sargent were gay. She and her husband, William Asher, who was the EP, they did not care. It did not bear on them. There was no, you need to keep a button on this. You need to sign a non-disclosure agreement. But Paul Lind, I mean, you can hardly read his character, Uncle Arthur, as anything but gay, even though it's never mentioned.
We've got a special going this week. We're pushing the frozen chocolate-covered bananas.
How revolting.
You don't eat them. You just make them. Now, here's how it works. You take the banana like this. You dip it in the chocolate.
Oh, well, that should be easy. I'm a dipper from way back.
Excellent.
Yeah. She used to be known as the Big Dipper.
All right. Let's not have any liberty on this job, no matter how weak.
Oh, we got a critic.
Anyway, as I was saying, you take the banana like this. You dip it in the chocolate like this. You hand it to Wise Guy. He rolls it in the nuts and sticks it in the tray. You got that?
Of course we've got it. How unskilled do you think we are?
Does that mean you think people watching back in the day would have known that this is a gay man, or is he just like funny uncle?
I think a lot of the perception could even be tethered to how this particular episode we're going to discuss was intended to land on audiences. From what I gather, even just from people who were alive when Bewitched was originally on, like queer is queer.
Mm-hmm.
It's stereotypes and affectations have not changed over the years. And so I think that had they wanted Paul Lynde to be playing someone who was more traditionally heterosexual, they probably would have either cast someone else or as a director been like, hey, let's tone down that flame a little bit.
Do you think uncle characters are often allowed to be played by gay actors or be more gay seeming? Because if you think about like, I mean, there are studies that like, you know, evolutionarily speaking, gay men played like an uncle protector role to families, blah, blah, blah. But also like, if you think about adult men that are allowed to be in the lives of families, but still remain single and not have families of their own, like it's very easy to like tack an uncle character. And like, there's no reason why Paul Lynde's character had to be Uncle Arthur.
He could have just been like
another witch. Right. But like, had he just been another witch who was an adult man without a family who was Paul Lynde, like then it may have been too much. But if you say, oh, he's Uncle Arthur, I don't know.
And I think they had
more harmless about it.
I think they had a choice too, because you had your uncles back then were either bachelors, like on Family Affair, the guy who ends up inheriting like his deceased brother's kids is a very heterosexual uncle who lives in like a penthouse and is a ladies' man, and then all of a sudden is thrust into fatherhood. That's an uncle who's single because he has a taste for partying and for women. I think that you had one of two tropes, and I think the other one is, like the gay uncle who is very clearly kind of an outsider.
Yeah, like Uncle Jesse, obviously, like no one for a second would even suspect him of being gay, even though he lives in San Francisco with two other single men.
And that hair.
Yeah. Paul Lynde, never openly gay. Never came out, never said anything on the record about it. It's crazy. It's also weird that he would make that like remark about Agnes Moorehead when he himself just didn't ever see the need to announce himself to the world. Paul Lynde.
Hollywood Squares, everyone.
Thank you, Uncle Arthur.
But like, he's so gay on he's even gayer, I think, on Hollywood Squares, and he's making more like dirty jokes.
How many men on a hockey team?
About half.
And it's just weird to think about this man who was in a bunch of people's living room introducing America to like gay snark, basically, even if they didn't know what that was. But if they encountered it like later in life, they'd be like, oh, that's like a weird sort of gay humor that he was doing.
And I do think maybe more so musically, and maybe even more so in the 80s, there was this acceptance of people who may have read queer, not so much as queer, but as just they're an artist. Like, it did surprise some people when George Michael came out, or that, you know, one of the guys on Wham is gay. And so I think in that decade, at least, you had like Boy George and Bowie. So I think through those two decades, it was also easy for people to shift from it's a queer thing to just that's kind of being a flamboyant artist,
right,
performer.
And also weirdly having like heterosexual versions of that with like Prince and stuff where you're like, gay? No, apparently not. Okay, well, cool. There's also Morris Evans, who plays Samantha's father, Maurice, was apparently closeted gay. Nothing on the record about it. Also weird that his name is Morris Evans, but his character's name is spelled the same but pronounced Maurice. George Tobias, who plays Abner Kravitz, was also apparently a closeted gay man. And then Diane Murphy, who's one of the two twins who played Tabitha.
Yeah.
Aaron Murphy took over. Diane Murphy stopped acting right after that. But she's married to a woman in Santa Barbara. And I think she does like social work, because when I worked for the paper there, I came across Diane Murphy, and I was like, oh, that's weird. She has, oh, that's actually her. Okay. Well, Tabitha grew up.
And she was out, like when I had discovered Bewitched in the early 90s. So she was out before it was as accepted as it is now.
Huh. Go her.
Yeah.
I usually give Nielsen ratings. They were not available for this episode. It was directed by Richard Michaels, who would actually begin a relationship with Elizabeth Montgomery towards the end of the show while she was still technically married to William Asher.
No.
The producer. They were separated, legally separated. They were, they weren't. Okay. So it's a very complicated thing. And weird enough, William Asher appears in this episode as an irate motorist, which is just an extra weird complication to it. This is written by Lila Garrett and Bernie Kahn. Lila had written a bunch of stuff and is randomly Eric Roberts' mother-in-law. Bernie and Lila also wrote The Barefoot Executive.
I know the Barefoot Contessa.
Different. They're related, but different branches of the family. So that's all the preface I have for this. Scene one, Darren primping in a mirror.
Did you say that this is the fifth season? Was this fifth season?
Fifth. Yeah. And fairly early on.
And this is Dick York's last season.
Yes.
Yes.
This is when his pain pill addiction had really started to manifest, and he and Elizabeth Montgomery had never gotten along well to begin with.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's a bummer.
Well, she did not get along with him or Agnes Moorehead.
What?
Oh, yeah. And that doesn't surprise me. I mean, Elizabeth Montgomery grew up in Hollywood. Her father was Hollywood royalty. You know, she was used to getting her way. Her husband is the executive producer.
And her and Agnes are both very strong personalities. Mm-hmm. It's like two bears in the same cage.
I think bears are in the same cage often at the zoo.
Are they? Well, two alpha bears.
All right.
Yeah.
Or two alpha bears at Fault Line.
Two alpha tigresses, if that's a more elegant analogy. I didn't know that. Huh. I guess she liked Dick Sargent, at least?
Dick York had romantic feelings for Elizabeth Montgomery. And
apparently everybody did.
Yeah. And both Elizabeth Montgomery and William Asher had very loose definitions of monogamy. I mean, he was no saint either. Mm-hmm. Pick any young actress who had like five or less lines in an episode, and she probably got that part not just through auditioning.
I can't say that anymore.
So for Elizabeth Montgomery to have gotten hers towards the end of the series, forgivable. But Dick York apparently had unrequited feelings for her and then had his own struggles with his pain and pain pills. And so this was the season where things really went off the rails for him. He was in a more recurring position.
Well, he's given a very central role in this episode.
Yes.
And makes some interesting acting choices.
Yes.
It's interesting that we start out with him looking in a mirror. And also there's like a weird, like there's the mirror and then there's a framed photo of himself, like mm-hmm. looking back at him, mm-hmm. which is probably just an accident of set decoration, but works very metaphorically for what I think is going on in this episode. He's worried about his looks. He has a double chin and a paunch and crow's feet. And I realize it's actually kind of rare to see like a straight married character fretting about his looks like that. That's not something you just really don't see on TV very often.
Because usually they just let themselves go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who cares?
It struck me too.
I'm married already. It doesn't matter.
And what was also interesting, and this was true of a lot of 60s sitcoms, where a character has a trait that is only used for one episode. Like there is never an episode again where Darren is worried about his appearance.
Right.
Kind of like in one episode of the Brady Bunch, Jan is all of a sudden this horrible practical joker, like ruining the house.
Yes.
Never mentioned again.
Yeah.
And I think that this is very clearly a device just used for this plot. Darren was not on the whole worried about his appearance, like most 60s sitcom husbands.
That makes sense. It's weird how audiences were just like, yeah, okay. Like something appears for once and like that doesn't mm-hmm. seem weird to anyone back then. Samantha enters. I am reminded that Samantha, Elizabeth Montgomery is, I always knew she's beautiful, but looking at her on screen, I was like, oh, she's interesting, beautiful. She has like very strong features. And there's not really anyone else I can think of in the history of Hollywood who looks quite like her. Like mm-hmm. she's just a very imposing, like strong female like presence.
Yeah. She's got like, especially this, in my opinion, at the beginning of the show, it's black and white. She's a little too buttoned up. By the end of the show, she's leaned a little too much into like the hippie mm-hmm. fashion. This, in my opinion, is like the Elizabeth Montgomery sweet spot. Like there is a dress she wears in the middle of this episode that's one of the most beautiful dresses.
Is it at the end?
It's the pink one that she's wearing with the flowers.
Yeah, but that also matched curtains in the background.
It did.
And it was weird because she's criticizing her husband's clothes when she's wearing that. It was like, you're wearing your curtains right now.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It's also like her second or third outfit that day.
Right.
Yeah.
Away from her curtains, that outfit is really cute.
Yeah.
She like, whoever, I didn't actually look up who did the costumes on this show, but they did a really good job, especially dressing her.
It was magic.
Costumes by magic.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that for everything in this episode, it was magical.
She comes in and she's like,
how long have you been standing there, honey?
I came in around the crow's feet. Did I miss anything?
Just checking to see how the old boy's holding up under the ears.
And how is the old boy holding up?
Just great. Except for a receding hairline, a double chin, and a trace of a pot.
Oh, sweetheart. On you, it looks good.
Sam, the key today is youth. 80% of the accounts that McMahon and Tate handle are designed to appeal to people under 30.
Well, you appeal to people under 30. Tabitha adores you.
It doesn't help him at all because he's still obsessing over his weird faults that he's
fretting because he works in advertising and he thinks advertising is a young man's game mm-hmm. and that he is now aging out of a position of authority.
Yeah, claiming that like no youth trust anyone over 30. And I kept waiting in vain for them to tell us how old Darren and Samantha are at this point. I always love hearing that from those older sitcoms.
They have to be in their 40s. I would imagine they're both in their 40s, right?
Wouldn't you? Yeah. And yet...
Yeah, if he's younger than me, I will jump out this window.
Oh, that... the older I get is so frustrating. How dare television do that? Cast anyone younger or, younger than me.
I think it's interesting that he can't hear the compliments that Samantha's giving. She's like, I like the way you look absolutely fine. Speaking of three gay men, have you ever perceived...
That's presumptuous, Drew.
I am.
Just outed
you. I'm coming out today.
Have you ever seen signs of age on a man and thought that's unattractive? I feel like most guys I know actually would think that was a plus and not a negative.
I think that men are lucky in that regard. If a man within reason takes care of himself as he gets older, I don't need the 8-pack and all that stuff, but just a modicum of self-care, I think he's definitely more attractive. If you give me Brad Pitt in his 20s, and granted, Brad Pitt's a bad example. He's not what I would call my type. But as an example, Brad Pitt in his 40s and 50s to me is more attractive than Brad Pitt, the boyish Thelma and Louise co-star.
I agree.
I don't know. Thelma and Louise, Brad Pitt's pretty hard to beat.
He taught America what abs were. It's true.
As someone whose beard went white in his early 30s, I would say that people still comment about the effects on age, on male looks. But yeah, we're lucky.
But we still go extra hard on ourselves. The stuff that we see on other people as that's absolutely fine. I think that we are jerks to ourselves about it.
And I also have to wonder at the time, because it just doesn't seem from any pop culture history that in the 60s, cosmetic products and beauty products were ever targeting men, aside from shaving. Now you've got this whole line of skincare just for men. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder if it was out of place back then to even have a man commenting on his appearance. Because in the mid-60s, the beauty industry was targeted almost exclusively towards women.
Yeah, shaving and coloring up your gray hair. Because I actually saw an old commercial for that when I was looking around online. Yeah.
I mean, we're hard on ourselves because we're gay men are dating our competition. What we're attracted to and the people we're trying to date, we can also apply to ourselves and be like, oh, I like that on him. Why don't I have that?
We also live in a pretty mercilessly judgmental city and industry.
Yeah, terrible city. Why did we live here?
Love it.
He says, the problem is that you love me. That's why you can't see my faults.
Honey, you just don't understand. Your problem is that you love me.
That's not my problem. That's my pleasure.
Well.
Isn't that sweet? Making up after a fight.
They obviously still really dig each other, and it's like watching Schitt's Creek and seeing how the parents on that show obviously really dig each other and love each other. It reminds me of how nice it is to see a functional relationship. Despite all the magic shit happening around them, these two people actually like each other. It's very sweet. Enter Endora. She says some mean things.
Ah, I see Derwood is his usual charming self. It's nothing. Just a little concerned about creeping middle age. Perfectly natural. Perfectly vain is what it is.
Vain? Huh. Darren hasn't a vein bone in his body. Well, I admit he has nothing to be vain about. But that doesn't stop him. Mortals are the vainest creatures in the world.
She delivers all her lines as if she is a grand actress, which she is. And it makes me wonder, why did she never play a villain on Batman? She seems like she would have been perfect for a female villain role. And she never did.
Probably because I bet contractually she probably wasn't allowed to. And B, the only role that I could think of her playing went to Tallulah Bankhead.
Yes.
The Black Widow.
Yes. That would make sense. Yeah. She could not.
I could see her being Queen of the Cossacks.
Ah, Anne Baxter. Mm-hmm. Little Eve Harrington.
Who played Marcia, Queen of Diamonds?
Carolyn Jones, Morticia.
Yeah, she did a good job with that. Mm-hmm. No one else could have done that.
And I also gather that Agnes Moorehead didn't really want to do television at all.
She's a movie star.
Aside from theater. One episode of Alfred Hitchcock Presents prior to this, I think that this was her only real foray into television.
I should have looked up to see if she ever gave a retrospective review on it where she said it was it was garbage or something.
But she died very shortly after the series ended.
Oh, did she really? I thought she lived longer than that.
Mm-mm.
Oh, bummer.
Wait, I thought her Wikipedia said 1990. That can't be.
Mm. So Samantha makes the mistake of explaining the situation to her mother that Darren's fretting about his looks, and Endora's like, oh, he's vain, whatever. I feel like Samantha at this point should know that she should not explain problems to her mother because she knows what her mother is going to do, which she just immediately does, which is to cast a spell on, in order to prove to Samantha that Darren is vain, she casts a spell on Darren that makes him vain, which is actually a very terrible plan.
Yeah, you're right. She died in 1974.
In Minnesota, of all places.
Oh, that sucks.
She was born 1900.
Really?
Yes,
I could not have guessed her age watching the show because she's wearing such that she could have been actually quite a bit younger than she really was. Cue the credits. I did check, by the way. For some reason, I thought they didn't redraw the Darren cartoon when Dick Sargent took over. They did.
I was impressed by how much the cartoon looked like Dick York.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's
really, and Dick Sargent.
And really high quality animation, too. Mm-hmm. Like, it looks great.
True. Let's take a commercial break.
What a great idea, Glenn. I love it.
Glad we said it in the episode.
We're not sticking this in awkwardly halfway through because we forgot to say that, but here it is anyway. Hey, Glenn. Happy Halloween. I can say that because this ad is running on October 30th, which means all my Halloween jokes are still technically valid.
You're presuming that people who subscribe to this podcast listen to it right away, which they may not.
Oh, that actually hadn't occurred to me until now that we might not be everyone's favorite podcast.
I'm sorry if I'm destroying your worldview again.
Let's talk about something else.
Like a love bazaar?
Atwater Village's most famous queer art space is hitting the road. If you're in Palm Springs celebrating Pride this weekend, you should stop by the Ace Hotel to see Nathan and Susie's pop-up shop. Why is it that Palm Springs celebrates Pride in October?
Because if they did it in the height of summer heat, everyone would die. And then where would we be?
You're just full of answers today. And then on Tuesday, November 5th, A Love Bazaar is doing a screening of a movie film.
Mine?
No, this film is by writer-director Ovi Ravid. It's about queer stuff, and after there's a Q&A and mingle.
I bet everyone asks good questions. A Love Bazaar is located at 3042 Glendale Boulevard, right off Hyperion Bridge. It's the pink and purple store with flowers on it. It's the gayest thing you can see when you get off the bridge. Oh, they haven't met Jacko, the jack-offer.
Is that a real thing?
I don't know.
Okay. I mean, there are guys who like to jack off by the river up there.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. Anyway, if you want to know more about upcoming shows, check out the store's Instagram at A Love Bazaar Store. A Love Bazaar. Find yourself here.
Or under a bridge.
How do I know about the jack off? I don't do it. They're just up there. I just know.
Miss Montgomery, this is an audience survey. Anything new on Bewitched for ABC's second season?
Oh, yes. We're moving to a new time, half an hour earlier, so the whole family can watch Bewitched. It'll be on at 8:30, 7:30 Central Time.
Judy Carn, does Love on a Rooftop have new plans for the second season?
Oh, yes, we're moving, you know. Not away from our rooftop or San Francisco, but we're going to follow Bewitched on Thursday night.
Marlo Thomas?
Hi. Yes, I'm that girl, and I'll still be seeing you at 9:30. Or well, you'll still be seeing me. Or we'll all be seeing each other. Bewitched at 8:30, Love on a Rooftop at 9, and us at... Look, if you'll just tune in at 8:30 and stay until 10, you won't miss a thing. There'll be a whole new look to Thursday night. Bewitched half an hour earlier, followed by Love on a Rooftop, and then that girl. Please join us in color on ABC.
Hey, Drew. Did any real people pledge money on Patreon this week?
They sure did, Glenn. I would like to think last week's pathetic farce encouraged their sympathy, which they then expressed in monthly monetary donations. So that means it was all worth it.
Did you take all the Halloween non-compliment out of the box of compliments?
Maybe. Did you do a Glenn Lakin original artwork for October yet?
I sure thought about it, and I have one day left to do it.
Well then, Glenn, it's time to thank everyone who's paid $3 or more to support this podcast. Our first name is Josh Van Arsdal.
Very good. I know him and I love him. And according to the box of compliments, he is smart as a crow, which is true. He's a teacher, professor.
They're quite smart. Crows are quite smart.
You've been on a crow binge today. Is there another name, Drew?
Dean.
A glimmer of light in the chaotic ink of the deepest abyss that does not end. And that's not a Halloween one, I guess. Okay.
Yeah, that's good.
Thanks, Dean.
It's a glimmer of light. Thanks, Dean. John Jones.
Sounds like a superhero from the Silver Age. As tenacious as a seagull.
A lot of bird ones coming up today. John Jones is literally Martian Manhunter. His name is John Jones. Yeah. James.
It's almost like I read comic books.
James Murphy, presumably not the guy from LCD Sound System.
Wields all the powers of the cosmos, but doesn't know it yet. Uh-oh. That sounds dangerous.
Oh, no, he's probably nice. Finally, Amy, no last name.
I know a lot of Amy's. Some I like, some I do not. Amy, you are better than literally everyone who lives in Bakersfield. Wow. I actually just watched the third season flashback episode of Give Me a Break, and Bakersfield gets a mention in it.
I wonder why.
Nell turns down a singing opportunity there.
They don't have singing in Bakersfield.
Well, then I guess she made the right choice.
In addition to random compliments, people who donate even $1 a month get all forthcoming episodes a week early, except this week because I've been sick, in which case you're getting it on a later date. I'm sorry.
If you'd like to support us, go to patreon.com/gayestepisodeever or click the link in the show notes.
Glenn, I really appreciate you spending time with me in a small enclosed room while I'm not feeling well.
You're feeling what now? Drew, are we back?
We're back. Hi.
Hi, Chase. We're still here, obviously, because we didn't record this after you left.
Chase is nodding very politely. Chase, it's really great. You can just jump in whenever you want. You don't have to wait for us to stop talking. Thanks, Chase. Scene two, we're on the Columbia Pictures backlot, which is Sunset Gower Studios now, I think. Try to do some research. I think.
I do not know this for a fact. I thought they shot in Culver.
Maybe they did.
The one that had the plantation up front that still exists, like where they shot Batman. But who knows? We may never know.
It's lost to history. The science isn't there yet. So a coffee mug sized version of Endora materializes on the passenger seat of the car, wearing different clothes than she was earlier, which is kind of weird.
The purple and green you had mentioned.
And then what we see her at the end, she's back in the original costume. So I just, whatever.
That's her travel costume.
When she's casting like travel spells. And Kat makes an incantation and then makes Darren basically fall in love with himself so he can't take his eyes off of his own reflection in his side view mirror. And he's sort of flirting with himself, which does raise the question of how gay is it to be in love with yourself? Apparently, very.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like expressing like actual like affection for yourself in that way. The man does honk. He's the Michael Chiklis looking bald guy. That is William Asher, Elizabeth Montgomery's husband until 1973. She would go on to marry the woman who played Murray's wife on Mary Tyler Moore, who herself was the original choice to play Carol Brady.
Oh, Joyce?
Joyce Bulifant.
Bulifant, yes.
Yeah. That's who he married after Samantha, after Elizabeth Montgomery, who I'll continue to call Samantha because it's really hard for me to separate those two. He also directed a movie I might make you watch one day called Night Warning or Butcher Baker Nightmare Maker. It's not allegedly supposed to be great, but that title alone, yeah.
The driver calls him gorgeous.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Sarcastically, like because Darren is holding up this green light because he's looking at his reflection. And
then his own car won't start and he gets honked at. The scene went on longer than it should have.
They really needed to use that back lot and get all of their mileage out of it.
Like, Endora didn't curse his car. There's no reason why his car suddenly failed for no reason, right? Okay, cut to Darren's office where his boss, Larry Tate, played by David White, who despite that mustache is not gay, and whose office looks like Mad Men, and I haven't watched Bewitched since I watched Mad Men. I'm like, oh yeah, I guess that's what a New York advertising office looks like. Mm-hmm. He's talking with Mr. Haskam about his lucrative pill business, which includes licorice-flavored liver pills. And he's nervous because they're branching out with a product that's called Tanning Potion. I'm not sure what that is. But it's his wife's idea and he's nervous about it. He only likes pills and he gives everyone pills. That's his deepest character trait, really.
There is also a character trait associated with him if you were to keep a word count of how often he uses one particular word.
What is it?
Conservative.
Mm-hmm. No flashy campaign for me. I'm a conservative man. I run a conservative business in spite of my wife. And that's the way it's going to stay.
Oh,
does he's really? Very conservative.
You hear it about 20 times in this episode.
Okay.
From him, his wife. From everybody.
Yeah. And I'm worried your firm's not conservative enough. I'm worried Darren's not conservative enough.
I need to run a
very
conservative campaign. And you have to wonder, for a show that was inherently progressive, how much of that is kind of poking fun at conservatives or how much of that is just of the time. Maybe it didn't have the meaning it does now.
I guess. But I mean, for someone that says that word is heavily associated with him, there's nothing to like about this guy. The guy fucking sucks. I don't know why anyone would relate to this guy.
Yeah. To me, he is the villain.
Yeah. He sucks.
Even when we'll dive deeper into his character.
When his wife shows
later
up.
Scenes. Yes, exactly.
I love his wife. Andrew Darren wearing a turtleneck and love beads, and he says the word haberdasher, so he's clearly become a homosexual because that's not
I mean, the actor definitely was given the direction to like...
Swish it up?
Yeah. Yes.
If there's one man who respects the old, the established, the tried and true, it's Darren. I'm sorry I'm late, but I passed this haberdasher's and I just couldn't resist it. Darren, this is Mr. Haskam of Haskam Drug Company. You know, I just thought of something. Already?
Oh, this man's got a mind like a steel trap. Let's hear it, Darren. There's no mirror in this room.
Young man, what are you wearing?
Love beads. They go all the way back to ancient Egypt. The high priest used to wear them.
High priests? You can't get more conservative than that. Cigarette, anyone?
Stevens, I hope you understand we want a mature, conservative campaign for our suntan lotion.
But the mature, conservative consumer doesn't hang around the beaches. The young people do.
Mr. Hascom, which one of those pills was for tension?
The red ones.
Okay, so
is that the official like director to actor terminology? Swish it up.
Every set I've been on where I've been told to act gayer, which is never, that's been the word used.
Okay, so I was going to ask you guys, what about his manner? What is he doing that reads as gay? This is a hard thing for me to break down. You act toss.
It's definitely effeminate.
Mm-hmm.
And especially compared to Darren, who is of that Mad Men advertising kind of pent up, not macho. It's hard to call Dick York macho, but very much reserved. And so we see him a little bit more effeminate, a little bit more expressive. His gestures are flamboyant. His narcissism is, of course, as intentioned by Endora, just rampant. Every reflection he can find, from his wife's dress to like a wooden surface, mm-hmm. Anything he can do to see himself. So even though, like now, yes, we have the stereotype that gays are vain, because they are. But back then, that stereotype may or may not have even existed. And so who knows if it was intentionally directed towards like a gay context, but it reads gay in his behavior physically, for sure.
I think expressive is a good way of describing it, and normal mm-hmm. Darren is withholding.
He's smiling a lot. There's a lot more going on with his face.
It's truly the happiest you see Dick York in his five seasons. Even in the pilot, when he's getting married, he still looks miserable.
Oh, I feel bad for Dick York now, I guess. Sure. No.
Who knows?
His voice is also maybe a little bit higher, and I think it actually gets a little bit further higher as the gayness gets swished up.
Yes.
So he scares off the pill man, and Tate says his beads are for the birds.
Hascom drops a $500,000 account right in our laps. No sweat, simple campaign. You almost blow it, and all you can do is stand there and smile.
I'll have you know these beads are very much in fashion.
Those beads are for the birds.
Exactly. The birds have the right idea. Take the peacock, for example. The males have all the brightly colored feathers. Well, the females are blah.
Which is like probably the gayest thing he does all episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mr. Tate calls him Cock Robin, which I know that's a thing. I don't really know what that is, but that's just a funny thing.
Because that's cock in it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that should be a gay bar or something.
I'm sure it is.
I mean, come on. The character was portrayed by two different men named Dick.
That is weird. And there's something about Yorking and Sergeant. No, can't mm-hmm. do that. Okay, so the next scene is Darren showing up with boxes that indicate he's been shopping. He is delighted.
Well, hi, sweetheart. What are you doing home so early? Did Larry give you the afternoon off?
No. I have a cocktail date at 5 with a very important client. I came home to change. Wait till you see the clothes I bought. I look magnificent in them.
Shouldn't I be the one to tell you that?
They cut very quickly to him wearing a Nehru jacket, which is a hip-length coat with like that weird like non-collar at the top. I don't know why I'm gesturing to you, because you saw it too. Popularized by the Beatles and the Monkees. And when we see him, we hear sitar music, because mm-hmm. we're supposed to know that he's supposed to kind of look like a rock star. But Samantha's, she's not into it, because maybe this is going to turn off this conservative pill man that he's trying to court. And he says that he can't hide who he is.
I think if your client is a rock and roll singer, you've got it made.
As a matter of fact, he's an old conservative who never got the On the Minuet.
And why are you dressed like that? You'll lose the account.
Sam, man cannot live by accounts alone. I've got to be me. Young, dashing, with it.
This isn't you. This is... Mother!
Young, dashing, with it. Doesn't say gay, but it seems like it's almost there.
And Samantha also, is always the case on Bewitched, very quickly and accurately surmises that this isn't her normal Darren. It's like the second he's upstairs, after he's tried on the first outfit, she knows immediately that her mother has cast a spell on him.
Was there ever an episode where Darren just wanted to be shitty to her and blames it on Endora?
I wish.
Like,
that's the reboot.
Yeah.
That would have been fun to watch. Just blame I wrecked the car. It's Endora's fault. I screwed my secretary. Blame Endora.
Yeah. Endora made me drink an entire bottle of wine with lunch.
Yeah.
What? I have a technical question about the way magic works. So she, very quickly, you're right. I was glad that it's like, oh, she knows what's up. This is not, she's smart enough to figure out the situation is. She can't undo her mom's spell.
That is where the show is rarely consistent.
Okay.
Whereas you have shows now that if they blend the two genres, let's say sci-fi and comedy, they have hard and fast rules. Bewitched, throughout its 8-year run, sometimes Samantha could reverse a spell. Sometimes she couldn't. Even in this episode, she's still able to like change what Darren is wearing when he has to meet
but not the change, client. Not change his mindset.
Yeah. Correct.
And so, some spells can be done with the wiggle of a nose. Some require a poem.
Yeah.
She doesn't wiggle her nose at all in this episode, does she?
Nope, not once.
Oh, that's a bummer. Not that that would translate to a podcast well at all, but yeah.
No, there's a sound effect to it.
Beep, 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 beep. Yeah. Let's play that. Beep, 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 beep.
But so the rules are never clearly established. They're all quite vague.
It's whatever the writer wants.
Even dealing with, like, in some seasons, time travel or I think that it was whatever suited the episode at hand.
They do one off for everything else. I guess that makes sense here too. So we open on Tate and Haskam having drinks in a weird space where there's like tables around a conspicuous body of water that you immediately know like someone will fall into that very shortly because there's no reason for that to be in this bar. And it's a very odd.
I don't know. Water features, I think, in the 60s and 70s were a thing. Right. Like indoor water features.
Were they? Maybe they are. I just don't know. But when I saw that, I was like, oh, someone's going to fall into that water. Yeah. That's why it's there.
I think we can all agree that clearly shouted soundstage. That was not on location.
That was not a swinging Los Angeles like night spot. And Mr. Haskam is still being a shit, basically. He does not think, if his wife can't convince him that the 20th century is better than the 19th century, what will this Darren Stevens person possibly be able to do?
And again, we hear the word, again, his favorite word, conservative.
Even
second favorite word is pills.
True. Yeah. An odd combination.
Yeah, and for some, it's weird that their conservative person is like basically trying to make everyone take constant pills. He also has a terrible business model of only making pills and like not trusting anything that's not pills and also wishing we're still the 19th century.
Yeah, and also like not wanting to expand his market at
right.
all.
Right.
Bewitched in terms of like advertising, like you had Mad Men, which was very faithful to how advertising ran. And then I would say the opposite side of the gamut of shows depicting advertising would be like Melrose Place, where it's all generic specifics like, oh, the files or oh, the clients. Mm-hmm. And I think Bewitched is definitely more of that category where the client's needs are only tailored to like what the episode plot function needed.
Darren enters wearing the narrow jacket and he is getting funny looks from the wait staff and he actually changes his pose. So he has some self-awareness because he sees that the waiters are looking at him like, what the fuck is this? And he has a very demure posture that he like kind of stops doing.
But then he goes over to a mirror.
He goes over to a mirror. That's his comfort zone. It does kind of remind me sometimes if there are certain items of clothing I will wear in like this small sphere of Los Angeles I will go to that sometimes if I go further out, I'm like, oh, I shouldn't have worn this. Mm-hmm. I feel awkward doing that.
When I go to Gen Con in the summers, my gaming group has a t-shirt that says Obey Your Dungeon Master that has like some S&M bondage art on it that I, after a certain age, became very uncomfortable wearing in certain circles.
Because you're like the only gay people there?
I mean, no. It's actually become a very inclusive space. It's very nice and sweet. Like you see a lot of trans outreach and
that's good.
Fathers and their non-binary children. It's very lovely. The gaming community has grown a lot, I will say.
Well, that is good. I hope you can wear your t-shirt with pride again. No? Okay. But it reminds me of like when I go home to like visit my parents and like when you're packing your clothes and you're like, oh, I shouldn't bring this home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Anytime my parents comment on my body, I'm like, I did something wrong. I packed poorly.
So this is where Samantha breaks the rules of the magic and chants a neat little spell that makes the love beads and narrow collar go away.
Roses and posies and daisies and weeds. Come, flower power, rip off his beads.
And Darren can't even get to the table where his boss is because of the reflecting pool. And he starts to look at himself and tell himself how beautiful he is. And it makes me think that the myth, the narcissist story that they're kind of doing a little thing on. I'm like, oh, that's a really gay story. It's about a man who falls in love with a very attractive man that he can't reach. Mm-hmm. It's weird to think about, oh, that's like a gay love story that ends very badly.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, he just falls into the pond.
Splash. It's funny.
Pratt falls.
cuts right to Samantha getting splattered with brown goo, which normally I try to make I don't want to think about that. It's really unpleasant.
I don't think they defecated on Bewitched.
No one ever defecated.
There's no bathroom there.
There's no toilet. There's no bathroom, yeah.
She's making a chocolate cake and it splatters all over. And it's just,
well, because he startles her.
One advantage of magic is you never have to defecate.
I mean, wait, didn't J.K. Rowling say that?
Yes. Yeah. She says before plumbing was a thing, the wizards were just shit their pants and magic it away.
Thanks, J.K. It's great. I will say that I remember watching an old episode of Password that she was on. It was her and the guy who played the rich guy from Gilligan's Island. What's his name?
Thurston Howell. Jim Backus.
Jim Backus. They are the two panelists. And there's her word is vibrator. And I don't know what that meant back then, but no one's like appalled by this. And I think she's like, jiggler. And the guy's like, vibrator instantly. And like, yay, you won. And yeah. Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I'll find that. I'll put that. See if I can find that clip and put it online. But that is the Elizabeth Montgomery sex joke I will make. Is she bad at chores? Is that one of the things? Is that
no? Like, early on, like in the first, what's interesting about the first five episodes is they are playing actual trajectory as opposed to pilot, and then bam, all of a sudden we're in the universe. And in those first few episodes, she is learning to like have the phone company come install the phone line, cooking. But shortly, like within the first five or six episodes, she's as good a housewife as Carol Brady or any of the other 60s women.
For some reason, I had it in my head that like she was always wanting to use magic because it would be easier and she's not able to do it and she's bad at stuff. But yeah, she's just startled. That's why she fucks up the cake.
Like, yeah.
Goes in to see what Darren's doing, and he's wearing floral pants, a mustard yellow blouse, a safari hat with a leopard band. He's kind of dressed like really like Titus from Kimmy Schmidt or like Temple Grandin, which is weird that he's both of them at the same time. And she's like, Darren says, what have you got all over you? And she's like, what have you got all over you? She does not approve. And this is as close as it makes to like saying like faggot or basically, but.
Never mind my clothes. Sam, you're a mess.
I was mixing some cake batter when I was startled by the roar of a bull moose. What's your excuse?
I'm sorry I startled you. Why don't you just zap it away like you did with my clothes at the restaurant?
Thank you. I will. Now.
Oh, no, not again.
Darren, I did it for your own good. I couldn't let you meet a conservative client dressed like a... like a...
Go ahead, say it. Like an attractive, desirable youth.
That's hardly what I was going to say.
And it's really hard to think of another response, unless she was like a fool or something.
Dandy?
Yeah.
Yeah. I noted that too.
Yeah. I mean, at the very least, Elizabeth Montgomery must have been thinking that, considering that she, you know, acknowledged that gay people exist, which is very progressive for the time. Okay, so the drinks are, because Darren ruined the drinks, they've been pushed back till tonight at his boss's house, and he's getting ready by gluing sideburns onto the side of his face, and people are laughing, so this is funny. I don't know.
It's a comedy joke.
And I think at this point, we are almost going from Darren as a potential gay guy to, by the episode's end, Darren is just like a hippie. And that, to me, is the antithesis of narcissism, because hippies, at least at that point, didn't bathe, didn't care how they looked, didn't keep their hair up. So it's like two different stereotypes that they're trying to play into one. And I don't know if it fully lands.
But like any like cultural movement, it gets appropriated by fashion for commerce.
And it's also a little bit like, I guess it was what they called mod in London with like Austin Powers, but it's somehow gaudier than that. It's almost Liberace because he's wearing a 14 karat gold lame suit is how he explains it.
Because he is called a hippie in that last scene.
Is he?
Yeah.
By an old person?
By Mr. Conservative.
Okay. He doesn't know what the fuck a hippie is. It's an ugly outfit, but it does give...
It's gold lame. It's not ugly.
Isn't it, though?
It's a choice.
It gives reason for Elizabeth Montgomery to put on the best outfit of the episode, which is, I don't know how to describe, I don't have words for fashion.
Mirrored sequins
like,
dress?
Metallic, yeah, like beyond sequins, like a stronger material than a traditional sequin and bigger than a sequin, just a bunch of almost reflective surfaces that amount to silver.
Which he can see himself in, so he...
Yes.
He's okay with her upstaging him a little bit.
14 carat? Well, it must have cost a fortune.
It did.
But I'm worth it.
Well, if you're worth it, I'm worth it too. Why should you be the only one who glitters?
How dare you use witchcraft to dress?
If you can dare gold lamé, I can dare anything.
I tell you, Sam, that dress will have to go. It's just too much.
Too much dress? Oh, well, I can fix that.
More witchcraft?
Yes, but less dress.
Why should you be the only one who glitters is her actual line. And then she makes it shorter with
magic,
and that is also cool.
Yeah, I mean, she looks fucking fantastic. Like, yes. She can go to Club 54 and just, like, snort all the cocaine.
Yeah.
Or dance and have a nice time.
People will be snorting cocaine off of her dress.
Yeah, that would
be a perfect use for that dress.
That's a conversation starter. So they're at the Tate's house, and Louise Tate...
In those outfits.
Yeah.
She does not magic them to be conservative.
No. She's going for it. I guess there's just nothing she can do because she can't break Endora's spell, so she's just going to try to lean into it, as you're thinking.
Yeah.
Mr. Tate's wife is played by this woman named Casey Rogers, and I'm like, I know her from somewhere, She's from Strangers on a Train. She's the horrible wife with glasses who gets murdered.
Yeah.
She looks a lot better in this.
Yes.
Yeah. And she doesn't get murdered.
Nowhere to go but up. Yeah.
Not on screen.
Wait, was she murdered in real life?
No.
Oh.
I didn't check that. So.
I don't believe she was.
Mr. Haskam is very critical of his wife's food intake.
Another hors d'oeuvre, Mrs. Haskam.
Oh, why not?
Emily, that's your sixth.
Who's counting?
I am. Kate, Stevens is late, as usual. I wonder what he fell into this time.
Oh, I'm sure he's on his way.
I hope he gets here before my wife eats herself into a stupor.
It's weird to be introducing that. Like, it's weird to have that, and, like, no one thinks it's weird. I'm like, oh, that's just normal for a husband to say to his wife that she's eating too much food. Fucking sucks. His wife's awesome, though. His wife played Mrs. Wilson on the Dennis the Menace live action, and she's cool. Like, she is, I like the way she delivers her lines and everything, but also she's very taken with these flashy mods.
Is that you, Darren? Samantha?
Oh, hi, Louise.
Louise. It is you, isn't it?
What magnificent creatures.
One of my favorite things in sitcoms of the 50s and 60s is when random guest star wives of, like, other guest stars are drafted into these plots or schemes of the main characters. Like, I'm thinking of the episode of I Love Lucy where Ricky times Lucy because she's always late for everything. And then the wife of the boss he's trying to impress or whatever is also sick of her husband timing her. And so she and Ethel and Lucy, like, get revenge. I don't know. I just love when little housewives take the power.
Which is what we see here. And I like that they wrote her to be an interesting and more likable character than they had to. She could have been.
Yeah.
I guess the plot depends on her being cool. That was just back in the time. Housewives got wrapped into anything. They didn't have anything to do on their own.
But in this case, she has controlling interest of her husband's company,
mm-hmm.
which I thought it was a great line when she calls it a gift.
For the last time, get your things.
Not yet, darling. Not until you hand over the entire Haskam drug account to this darling young man.
I think I'm witnessing a miracle.
You're out of your mind.
Possibly. I'm also the major stockholder in the Haskam Drug Company. You gave me that gift yourself, you know, darling.
That wasn't a gift. That was a tax dodge.
Well, no matter. 51% is 51%. And I say we take the Haskam image out of mothballs. And into today's scene.
He's a monster through and through.
So basically, he's still resistant. Sam and Gay Darren are giving him... like advice that would have never occurred to him. And it's good advice. And it's advice he should follow if he wants to make money. But because he's never considered these sorts of people to be anyone that could give him any real information.
I have such respect for all of your products, but they don't seem to get to the right people.
A pill. My kingdom for a little red pill.
I've always told Whitney he should try to reach the younger set.
Particularly with suntan lotion.
After all, the younger the customer, the smaller the bathing suit.
And the smaller the bathing suit, the more skin that needs suntan lotion.
They're right, you know, Whitney. Oh, you're definitely not with it. I've pointed that out a number of times.
Emily, shut up and eat.
Mr. Hascom, you really should listen to Darren. He has his finger on the pulse of today.
The wife is convinced, and they agree to let Darren take care of the tanning potion account with his, like, hipster young person freewheeling ways. And everyone cheers. And
not just a tanning account, like all of their business.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, even better. And Sam tells Tate that it was actually her plan all along to show up like this.
Honestly, Larry, this is what Darren had in mind all the time.
You mean you two dressed this way just to convince Hascom to go after the young market?
Absolutely. Darren knew he had to do something dramatic.
Well, I've certainly got to hand it to him. And all this time, I thought it was just vanity.
Darren Vane? Why, he hasn't a vein bone in his body.
Oh, come on, everyone. How about a toast?
And, like, show what fun young people it is, which is awesome because that's quick thinking on her part, and that does solve things, and it makes Darren seem not crazy. And in addition to being magical, Sam is a quick thinking person.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Tate is always a monster.
Is he really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, not like a villain, but just an asshole.
He's the boss. He's the horrible boss man.
Yeah.
That stupid mustache. Is there anything else that happens?
And there's another scene after this.
There is another scene with Endora, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is that scene there for?
That's technically for her to kind of rectify what she's done.
All right, Samantha, I will take the oath. As long as the stars remain in the sky, as long as the water remains in the well, I promise I will never again zap on Durwood another spell. Now, I should like a cup of cafe au lait.
Oh, no, not so fast. First, I want the witch's honor sign.
Oh, really, Samantha? Don't you think you're carrying this thing a bit too far? After all, I am your mother.
Why do you only remember that when it's convenient to you? The witch's honor sign, please.
Oh, all right. Witch's honor. That's better.
Since we've established that Sam can't undo Endora's magic.
She takes an oath, but she crosses her fingers, so she doesn't really take it. And then Darren's still dressed like that, but it's his choice now because he has to keep up the appearance that he's young.
Yeah, so it's not really his choice. It's the way he dressed did it so well for the business that now more accounts are coming in wanting him to be young and hip.
But we can tell by the joyless look on Dick York's face that he is back to being regular Darren.
Yeah. He's what does Samantha see in him?
Mm.
Does she hate her mother that much that she's marrying the most boring mortal she could possibly find?
Because in the pilot, it is a montage. Before the credits even roll, they're engaged. It's like one day a woman met a man, and it's like three shots, and then boom, honeymoon night.
Huh.
So we don't get a lot of their like courtship.
We don't ever see what she sees in him.
No.
They run
into each other in a revolving door.
Sometimes exciting people like boring people.
Mm-hmm.
Because they remain exciting.
Yeah. She could have done better.
She could have done better. I think this episode is making an interesting statement, perhaps accidentally, about the role gay men can play in the economy, basically, where if you take that they're making Darren act very, very gay, he is in this weird position where he's a flashy dressed, effeminate man who is telling women what they should want. And the conservative business owner is like, I don't like this dynamic. I don't like that this gay man has any sort of influence and that my wife is agreeing with him. However, he can make me money. I don't know. That probably was not something that was on anyone's mind back then, or maybe it was. I don't know. Maybe it would be in Los Angeles. But it's interesting that like that is a role gay men actually ended up taking more and more as the decades went by.
Mm-hmm. I know. I feel like that is also a historical role. I don't know. I have no facts to back this up.
Yeah.
But in my gut, I feel it's true.
I would love to know more about the actual writer's room for this episode and the intention and how much of it was just being ahead of its time and intentionally and how much of it was purposeful.
And how much, or we're just overreading because we're...
We do that.
That's our job.
It's not our job. No one's paying us.
We're making a lot of money. We're super rich. There was an actor who got outed. He was like a fairly successful actor, and I can't think of his name off the top of my head. You might actually know him. And not long into his career, he got outed and like was not getting roles anymore. So he said, fuck it. Moved to Palm Springs, like basically married a guy and became the most successful interior designer in the Los Angeles area.
Yeah.
And rich women, famous and non-famous, would go to him and he'd just design all the rich interiors of Los Angeles. So that was something that was around this era. So that at least existed.
Didn't he get murdered?
Probably. Probably. I hope not, but that is how a lot of those stories ended.
Because there was an actor who was on two episodes of Batman, 60s Batman, and the story you're telling is very similar to his, where he was outed in like 67, and then I think his story moved him to New York, though.
Oh.
But
where he was also brutally murdered.
Yeah.
They usually ended badly back then. It was not a happy life. Chase, thank you for talking Bewitched with us. Is there anything more you want to say about this episode or the show in general?
I think that even if this episode may have unintentionally missed the mark on its representation of gay characters, overall, the show deserves so much credit for its messages of race. Mm-hmm. During the civil rights movement, Elizabeth Montgomery and Asher took a very firm stand on equality. And there's a great episode in the final season, I think it's called Sisters at Heart, where Tabitha's best friend is black, and she doesn't know why they have two different skin colors, and Tabitha herself being magical creates a spell that gives each of them dots across their faces of the other person's skin color.
Oh.
And there are a lot of, for a show that was very saccharine and very network and very 60s, it had a lot of very progressive episodes. And so, you know, I think the show is memorable for many reasons, and that is chief among them.
I like that. Glenn, do you have any thoughts on witches and or gay?
I like when witches are gay and when gays are witches.
Fair.
Perfect.
There are too few gay witches on TV. Chase, if people want to tweet their questions about Bewitched, yes, and they're like, where can they find you?
Please tweet at me. I am at M Chase McCown, M-C-C-O-W-N, the first initial of my first name, my actual name, and my last name. A stupid handle, but it's my handle nonetheless.
What's the M stand for?
Matthew.
Okay. That's fine. Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. Checks out.
Dial M for Matthew.
Dial M. Thank you. God, that would have been a much better handle, except I don't go by Matthew. Same handle for finding me on Instagram as well.
And if people want to see your comedy stylings or any other creative efforts, where should they look for you?
I am at UCB fairly regularly. I will be there doing a scripted show on Tuesday, November 5th, called From Crumbs to Caviar, a spoof of the Bette Davis-Joan Crawford feud. I'm playing the Bette Davis character. Mm-hmm. And then I'm also there performing with the Agenda and LGBTQ team, second Saturday of each month, 7 o'clock, UCB Sunset.
Cool.
And then I do stand up whenever I feel like it. Sometimes at home, sometimes for an audience.
We appreciate your stand up here and also your Bewitched information.
Thank you. It was a true pleasure.
Hey, Glenn.
The?
If people want to follow you on social media, what's a place they can find you?
I'm on Twitter at IWriteWrongs. That is right with a W. And Instagram at Bros Courts. This month, I've been doing Inktober, kind of.
So if you want to go see all the cool inky things that Glenn drew over this past month, because this is running on October 30th, go to Bros Courts on Instagram. Yeah.
Drew, where can people find you if they want to?
No one wants to find me, but I'm on Twitter at Drew G. Mackey, M-A-C-K-I-E, and you can follow this podcast on Twitter at Gayest Episode. You can also follow this podcast on Facebook if you like Facebook. We really don't, but we're there if you want to get news about the latest episodes. Listen to all previous episodes at gayestepisodeever.com or go to wherever you'd normally find podcasts on your phone and we'll be there. Please give us a rate and review. Those are important for all the reasons you've heard on every podcast ever. And also, we're on Patreon at patreon.com/gayestepisodeever. We really appreciate all your contributions to the show. They help us justify all the time we're sinking into it. And also, you're helping unlock a cool bonus podcast. Whole series of episodes are going to go up only on Patreon with every little donation that you give us. Our logo was designed by Rob Wilson. Please go look at his cool art at robwilsonwork.com. This is a Table Cakes podcast. Table Cakes is a Los Angeles-based podcast network, and you can find out about the other shows on this network by going to tablecakes.com. Glenn, I'm trying to decide what costume I should dress as for Halloween this year, and I can't decide between slutty Caltrans worker and slutty turtle. What do you think?
I think you should go as Kinky Impeachment.
Kinky Impeachment. I like that. Wait, that almost works.
Yeah.
That
almost, you get the peach in there.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And mince. And,
yeah. So you just wear a jock strap,
mm-hmm,
with mince attached to the front part.
I mean, that's something people are just wearing for Halloween in West Hollywood anyway, regardless. Yeah. Of, yeah. Podcast over, Glenn.
Bye forever.
Table Cakes production.